My name is Annabelle, and I'm interviewing Philip Jose over his experience in Hurricane Harvey and how he had to deal with the animals here at Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi. The date is Friday, September 29th, 2017, and we are in his office. There could be several interruptions due to the fact that he is in his office and the door is open. Okay, so when you first heard about Hurricane Harvey, what came to your mind?
Hurricane Ike. I was a student at Texas A&M Galveston when Hurricane Ike came through, and it hit right over our campus, and we evacuated for that. The school was very proactive, and at the time when we evacuated, it was actually supposed to come to Corpus Christi. So, you know, we had taken a couple of things, you know, oh, it's going to be a 4-day weekend, we'll be back. And then the hurricane turned north and ended up going right over our campus, and our campus was closed for the rest of the semester. So, you know, when I saw Hurricane Harvey, my first thought was, okay, this one looks like it might be headed this way. Let's start mentally preparing for worst case scenario if we have another Ike-like incident.
Okay. Do you know what the university's procedure is for a hurricane when it comes to preparing the labs and the animals that are in the labs?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Every year we have a meeting regarding just the general goings-on of the college and the university. And one of the things we talk about in our college and departmental meetings is to be prepared for hurricanes, especially in the fall semester, as that's typically the peak of hurricane season. And having lived through a hurricane at a university, you know, it's one of those warnings that very much rings true. So I do, you know, pay a lot of attention to any advice, any changes in policy we have. In the case of our labs, we help craft that policy, and along with EH&S and our superiors, department heads, and the recommendation of the university. Generally, it's about securing equipment, securing chemicals in case there is a lot of damage to a building, to limit the amount of chemicals that can be exposed or stolen. Anything that could be potentially dangerous, sharps, scalpels, needles, things like that, make sure they're secured. Cover up all your equipment so that if water does get through, it doesn't ruin your equipment. And then the last thing we do is we take care of the animals. And the reason why that's last is because usually you're evacuating, so there's no sense in packing them up until everything else is ready to go, and it's literally the last thing you do on your way out the door.
Okay, so did the university supply you with supplies for the hurricane, for the animals? Did they give you guys bottled water, food?
So they didn't give us food. It wasn't like we were rationed out, here's food for the animals. Mm-hmm. But I do have a purchasing card from the university, which is used for lab supplies and taking care of the animals. So if there's anything I needed for the animals, I would use that. So in a way, they did. So it may not be an actual ration of food, but they've given me the means to support the animals. Generally, we keep on stock, in stock, mice, rat food for the animals and things like that. So since I have that on hand, I just grab what I have and bring that with me so that we don't waste it. And usually I've got a 5-gallon jug of water floating around, so I just grab that. And That's pretty much the procedure with dealing with the animals.
All right. So whenever you took the animals from the campus, did you take them all in their original containers or cages that they're in here?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
They all have fairly large cages, mm-hmm. and trying to move them in those would be very difficult. They're heavy, they're bulky. We would need a pretty sizable trailer to fit everybody in. Plus, with us driving, it's generally safer to keep them in something a little smaller, just to let them feel protected. Most animals, if they feel, you know, they're in a cave or in a burrow, or, you know, in a nest of some sort, they'll feel safe. So when you're doing something like moving, it can be very stressful. It's a very new experience for them, especially when there's, you know, barometric changes going on. They're sensing that there's something not right with the hurricane coming. You know, you'll see their behavior change. And then when your behavior changes, they really feed off of that. And so we have some smaller containers that we'll put them in, or crates that we'll put them in, depending on the animal, to travel, so that they feel safe. And then we have larger cages that collapse down that we bring with us. So during the travel, they're in small cages, and then when we get to our final destination where we evacuated, we set up larger cages and put them in those larger cages. It's not always as large as their regular cage, but it's not a permanent living situation. It's typically we're going to be evacuated for a couple of days, maybe a couple of weeks, so it's enough space that they'll be okay for a couple of weeks. And then at that point, if you do realize you're going to be gone for a long time, you can reassess the situation and go find other caging, other housing, to get them in something more appropriate for long-term living quarters.
So when you evacuated, where did you guys go? And if you went to a hotel, how did you manage to get all those animals into a hotel?
Yeah. So we didn't go to a hotel. Luckily, we've got family in Texas. So we evacuated out to family in San Antonio. And that was an interesting experience, because as we typically visit there, we usually have maybe one personal animal with us. This time we had all of the university, well, most of the university animals. Some of the animals went with a student worker. And then all of our personal animals on top of that. So it became quite interesting, as it was like a clown car, as we were pulling in animal after animal after animal after animal, at which point the family said something along the lines of, "You can't swing a dead cat around here without hitting two animal cages." That was just Lee.
Okay.
He's just coming in to make a joke, probably.
Oh, Lee Lehrman just walked in but left the office. Okay. So you said that you had a student worker take some of the animals. Mm-hmm. Do you know what their experience was with that?
I don't know exactly what his experience was. So I'd be hesitant to speak on behalf of him, but he took some of the snakes because he has a lot of snake enclosures. And he raises a lot of snakes, and we had literally run out of room in our car. We couldn't fit them anywhere else. Plus, I'm not sure how the family that was very graciously letting us stay with them would feel about a 6.5-foot bull snake just showing up on their doorstep. So I had asked my student worker if he'd be willing to take him, and he said sure. And so I set him up with the necessary food and water he would need. And we stayed in contact throughout the hurricane.
Cool. So which animals gave you the most trouble during this evacuation? university-wise.
Well, okay, university-wise. Because I can tell you it was our tortoise. Our personal tortoise was the most trouble because he refused to stop pooping. Every time we'd put him in a cage, he'd poop and then clean it up. We'd put him back in and he'd poop again. And we were like, oh my gosh, we are trying to get out of here. Stop pooping. The university animals, the one that gave us the most problem, really none of them gave us very many problems. Ferdinand, the large bull snake, did take an aggressive posture towards me when I went to take him out of his cage, and he struck at me, which is fairly unusual. But once I got the hook on him and was able to grab his tail, he calmed right down and was as docile as he normally is. So I think he was, again, a little stressed out and a little amped up from the, in, you know, the storm incoming, like, again, sensing that. As usual, Monkey Joe, our rehab squirrel, was, for lack of a better term, a little squirrely. He still gets a little nervous around people and with people handling him. So it's not as easy as reaching in and taking him out like we can with the snakes or with some of my personal animals. His is a little bit more tricky in that you have to coax him into his cage, and or at least close enough into his cage that you can get a hand around that his butt and kind of push him in. So it takes a lot of treats. Luckily, he's food motivated, so if you can just throw a lot of food at the back of his cage, he'll inevitably, curiosity will get the best of him, and you can once he gets in the travel cage, just kind of push him in and close it, and he usually turns around, gives you a dirty look, and then turns back around and continues to eat his pile of treats. So probably the squirrel.
And which one? Which animal gave you the least issue? Like, which one was just, like, it was fine the entire time, no problems?
That would probably be the blue tongue skink. He pretty much slept through everything. They sleep a lot anyways, but he really did sleep through everything. Every time I turned around, he was sleeping. He was really easy to handle. He ate fine, he drank fine, he slept like he normally did. You would think that it was just another day,
right,
for him. Like, he didn't even notice anything go on other than the fact that all of a sudden he was crammed in a vehicle with a bunch of other things, and oh, it's dark, I think I'll go to sleep.
That's funny. So, how many animals, including your personal pets, did you have to care for at this during this hurricane evacuation?
One. Oh, jeez. Hold on. Give me a second here. I'm going to have to use my fingers to count. Ten animals. Yep.
Oh, gosh. So, so I know that you have, a few personal pets. So, how did your personal pets notice the other animals? Were they upset that you were giving the other animals attention, or were they pretty relaxed about it?
They didn't notice the other animals, but I'm not sure I'd say they were also relaxed, because hurricanes, they, just like other animals, they pick up on that. And just the general hustle of getting out and evacuating and traveling in new places does put a little bit of stress on them. I think with personal animals, they pick up on your stress a little bit more because you spend more time with them socially. Not that we don't spend time with our animals here in the university, but a lot of times there's classes in the labs where the animals are held, and we didn't necessarily get the university animals when they were hatchlings or pups or young, so they don't necessarily have that bond with you, from raising them, where the other animals we have at home we've raised since hatchlings or have had for many, many years, so there's very much a bond there, so they really pick up on your emotional state as well. They didn't notice at all. One of the reasons why is we tried to keep animals separate. You generally put some sort of barrier or something between them so that they don't see each other and they don't stress out. I've had my bearded dragon here in my office before, and every time he sees the blue-tongued skink, even though the blue-tongued skink is much larger than he is, my bearded dragon will run over and puff up his chest and try and start a fight. So I have to put a small barrier up when I have my bearded dragon here so that he doesn't bother the skink. The skink never looks impressed. The skink always looks confused. So we kept them separate so there wasn't a lot of interaction between those animals at all. So they, it really was a non-factor.
Can you tell me about any of the sounds that the animals made? Was there any like new sounds that you've never heard before? Anything in that sense?
Nope. Reptiles aren't always vocal. Mm-hmm. At least the reptiles we have. Usually they're only vocal if they're angry.
Thanks for making the standards better.
No problem, Herschel.
I'll see you Monday.
All right, take care. The squirrel generally doesn't make many sounds. None of the animals really made a lot of sounds. The only real difference was the squirrel was less active. He was definitely less active through, but he, in being less active and more calm, I was actually able to handle him more than I had previously when working with him. So that was about the only real behavioral change I noticed.
That's interesting. You'd think the squirrel would be more like
panicked, stressed, right. I gotta go. He, once we got him in his cage and got him settled and gave him his little pot to hide in, it's a little flower pot, he just calmed down and just sat down and was really relaxed. So that was nice because he was the one I was the most worried about, stressed the most.
Now, can you tell me, just because we've talked about the squirrel a lot, mm-hmm. can you tell me why the squirrel is here?
Okay,
so people can kind of understand.
So Monkey Joe is a very special squirrel. He is non-releasable, which means he was brought to rehab, and he had so much damage that he was not deemed fit for being sent back out in the wild on his own, that he would not be able to survive, which means he would need a new home. When he was a pup, during a storm, his whole litter was blown out of a tree, out of their nest. And he was the unlucky one who fell on the cement and hit his head. So when he was brought into the rehabber along with the rest of the nest, he had some mobility issues. He'd walk in circles. He couldn't walk straight. He had difficulty standing. And they were pretty sure he was not going to get better. He actually did show a lot of progress as he grew, because he was very, very young when he was brought in. I'm not even sure his eyes were open yet. And so they put him with the other wild squirrels, hoping, well, maybe he was young enough. He had figured out how to overcome any of the damage he had gotten, that brain damage he had gotten, and he could be re-released, because that is the goal of rehabbing. It's not to keep animals, it's to get them back in the wild where they belong. And he improved very rapidly and improved a lot, almost to the point where they felt comfortable setting him outdoors, but then he just plateaued. And he stopped improving. He still had coordination issues. He still had balance issues. We think he may have vision issues based off of how he looks at things and focuses things. He turns his head in abnormal ways when he's focusing on something to see something. So we think he may have some blindness, which for squirrels being blind, having coordination issues, is not a recipe for success in the wild. So he was deemed non-releasable. Unfortunately, the rehabber who he was brought to was retiring and didn't have a place for him. So he was rehomed with me. I was sub-permitted under the rehab permit, and I've been working with him ever since to make sure he at least has a good home.
Right. Nice. So, is there anything that you wish you could have done differently, or do you feel if there is another hurricane in the future that you would do differently, or do you think you guys handled the situation fairly well?
Well, we definitely handled it very well. We definitely handled it very well. We didn't have any, we didn't lose any animals. We didn't have any animals that stressed. We didn't have any animals that stopped eating. The only thing I would probably do differently is stacking the car on the way there. It was a bit of a Tetris game. We were moving cages around, and they're because we have those collapsible cages, and how to fit things and how to stack things to maximize the space and minimize the rattling. So I think the only thing we would really change would be how we packed the car, which is on the way back when you have all the time in the world, you're not rushing to get out. We are able to pack it a little better, and I think having gone through this now, once we have a better idea of how we'd want to stack things to make everybody have a more pleasant trip.
So lastly, is there anything that you would like that we didn't go over that you would like to add to the interview?
There's nothing that really comes to mind. I think the only thing that I could think of is to remember that after hurricanes like this, we focus a lot on the human impacts and the humans that have been affected by this, which is rightfully so. But don't forget about the animals and the wild animals as well. So if you experience a hurricane and you see a wild animal that looks injured or hurt, call your local rehabber and help them. If you're looking for something to do when a hurricane comes through, after a hurricane's come through, and you're having problems finding places to volunteer or do something to help, look at wildlife rehab centers, because a lot of times after big storms like this, they will get swamped with baby animals, birds, all kinds of things, and they need as much help as they can get. My squirrel, Monkey Joe, he didn't come from a hurricane, but he came from a really, really bad thunderstorm and windstorm that happened. And like you saw, they had, I think, 8 from that litter that were brought in, and just by one person. So you can imagine after a hurricane how many animals would be brought in. And then also the wild animals that are still out there. Here in Corpus Christi, it's an unfortunate time because we're having a migration come through, the bird migration, especially hummingbirds. And hurricanes tend to rip off a lot of blooms, a lot of flowers, and tear up a lot of plants that these hummingbirds rely on. And Corpus Christi and Rockport are a big stopover for them. They stop here to refuel before continuing south. So after something like this, if you know there's a migration coming through, put out bird feeders, because a lot of their food source probably is gone. And so help them out. That's probably the best thing you can do, and I think that's all I can think to say about
all right
now.
Thank you.
Absolutely.